Kolick a little while ago.
You watch him now on the screen.
It's bad ball. It's bad football.
That was Jim Bellett, number 61.
I guess.
Speak up, please.
Get you some of that, Jalen Tabor!
Is that good enough for you?
I'm almost embarrassed.
You can be miserable, but they are going to be miserable with you.
I said what I said.
We have to score.
What an exciting time in America.
And here he is, having the time of his life.
Don't clap. That could be tough. Don't clap.
Hey, welcome back in. Cube Show Sports Radio, 730 and 103.9 The Yump. Check out our friends at Southern RV Wholesale. Go to srvwholesale.com today. Fifth Wheels, travel trailers, toy haulers, and more at srvwholesale.com. You can finance on site. You can trade yours in. You can rent RVs at Southern RV Wholesale, located right there on Jordan Lane here in Huntsville. Go to srvwholesale.com. All right, so the College Football Playoff Committee goes Clemson 1, Oklahoma 2.
Yes.
Georgia 3, Alabama 4.
Oh, Alabama. They
if you,
did it.
If you used the criteria that I brought up earlier in the show of who has the most egregious strike against them in their – so whoever's negative is biggest. So – Clemson having lost to Syracuse. Oklahoma having three teams on their schedule. Because I think that's more egregious, having three teams on your schedule that have won two games than losing to Iowa State. Georgia having lost to Auburn on the road, or Alabama not having lost, not having won their division, which I think more people pay attention to that than they do having lost to Auburn. How would you rank the teams then by least egregious, most negative against them?
I would say the least of the most egregious is, for me, Oklahoma. Because I know you say that's your most. You can't do anything about
Baylor.
Oh,
no, it's not the most, but I'm just – I'm saying that's the most against Oklahoma, but I don't think that's the most of all of them, no.
I you can't do anything about your conference. I mean, they are who they will be. And you only get to play the teams in front of you. And if Baylor sucks and Kansas sucks – you know, and Liberty sucks. You know, Liberty's the other team you're talking about, right? No. Liberty's something Baylor played.
UTEP is Ofer, UTEP, yeah. Baylor, and Kansas each one win.
UTEP. UTEP, I understand, because you get to schedule them, but you can't do anything about your conference. I will go up to the most egregious then, and it's different. I think Clemson losing to Syracuse is the most egregious.
I do too.
Above Ohio State losing to Iowa. That's number two on my list. Oh, Iowa, you can at least say it was a road conference game, tough environment, but that's a winning team. That's a team that's in a bowl game. And that's a team that beats top 10 teams, it seems like, every single year.
I'm with you.
I think losing on the road, I think there was a Friday night game, and I know you lost your quarterback, but Syracuse was not a good team. And Syracuse, I get, also almost beat, you know, LSU, when LSU forgot how to play football for the first month of the season. Or after the first couple of games of the season and for like 3 weeks there. I think that's the worst. And I think Alabama winning the division is, I guess, number three on that list.
I think, and that's the only thing about, I think as far as the teams that are in, the committee definitely got it right. But I sit back and I seriously wonder, did the committee get number one right? Because I think Oklahoma's the hottest team in the country right now. And I think top to bottom, everything included, all things included, listen, it's of great benefit that Georgia got to play the team that they lost to again and beat them the way they did. Then maybe Georgia should have been the number one football team. I want to hear your argument against it. And people are going to say the way the loss looked at Auburn, the point differential of the loss at Auburn, which I understand, but that also happened to another team that's included in the college football playoff. So it can't be that bad. It can't be that unforgivable. And then they had a chance to go beat them again, and they did it. So I'm with you. I think the loss to Syracuse is completely overshadowed, and I don't know why. I don't understand it. I think people take the Kelly Bryant injury and just completely let that go. You make a good point about Oklahoma's schedule. It's not all on them. Listen, they played Ohio State on the road. It's a huge win. So it's not 100% on them, but that schedule is weak. I mean, their overall opponent record is sub-500. It's not good.
No, here's the thing. I get that you can say, hey, you scheduled Utah, but you also scheduled Ohio State.
Sure.
So you did schedule up. And no team, not named Alabama, not named anybody, is going to schedule two or three of these really difficult games. And for the Big 12, they're at a bit of a disadvantage. They only have three spots that they can schedule those games because they play that nine-game conference schedule. So they can't put two FCS teams, a mid-tier FBS team, and a high-level FBS team. They only got three spots.
Right.
So they can pick a UTEP, who they were probably going to beat anyway. Turns out UTEP was anywhere close to good this year. And then you play your conference slate. And I'll say this, they have looked very good in every one of their games except for their loss against Iowa State. And even then, they weren't shut down or shut out. That was a highly competitive, very good football game on the road. So, actually, no, that was in Norman. So, I am very, very, very forgiving of what Oklahoma did with their schedule because they looked so good against that schedule. You know, they struggled a little bit against Baylor, but they pulled away from them. They blew out the second-best team in their conference twice. I don't know what more you could want from them. This is the kind of schedule, by the way, that if we're talking the first year of this, could have gotten Oklahoma, gotten them out of the entire picture.
Yeah. Very well could have.
And it's weird. Let me just ask you this. Do you think the Big 12 screwed up having a championship game? Because they knocked TCU out of a Power 6 New Year's game. And they cost that conference a lot of money.
Could Oklahoma have been? I mean, let me ask you this. If Oklahoma doesn't do what they did to TCU again, and they're sitting at home, is there any chance, which they probably wouldn't have been sitting at home, they would have had some teams playing in regular season games. Is there a chance they get passed?
Well, not this year, definitely no. This year worked out for them, but this year just happened to be that the first year it's back.
I mean, the reality is the way you're doing it, ensuring a rematch, I think is always going to work against you. There will be years that it helps, but in the long run, I think it's working against you because you're never going to give two teams that big benefit to help themselves. I mean, like this year with the rematch, Auburn and Georgia, it obviously benefited Georgia, and Auburn would have been able to ensure themselves a spot in the playoff. But if you know you're going in with a rematch every year, there could potentially be years when you're on the edge, you're on the brink, and somebody else looks better, and somebody else does more. And maybe another team in a conference championship game gets a team that they didn't play that's also impressive and plays their way in above you.
You know, what's funny about the SEC championship game, too, is that we always talk about it's a chance for someone to play themselves in, but we don't get very many chances to play themselves out. This year, we had a chance in the SEC for someone to play themselves in and out.
Yeah.
The winner was getting in. Auburn was going to get in.
And the loser was not going to go.
And the loser was, like you said, was not going to go. The winner was going to make their case because the SEC champion almost always gets the benefit of that and will almost always at this point. But for the first time, first time in the playoff era, and for one of the few times in SEC championship history, we actually had an SEC team knocked out of the college football playoff or the BCS discussion because of this. But at least that team still got a Power 6, what do they call them? The New Year's 6 game.
Yes.
So tired of these designations.
It's okay. We'll figure it out.
New Year's 6. Because the Chick-fil-A Bowl is like, hey, we want in. Peach Bowl wants to be a part of that New Year's 6. Okay, guys, you get to be a part of the New Year's. Good! We're the Peach Bowl, damn it!
Yeah, and Gary Stokins got himself a big game. So, Auburn and Central Florida.
Did you hear the quote from Nick Saban? He went on a bit of a politicking spree right after the game on late night ESPN. And he said, You know, people forget about that Florida State game, that they were the number three team in the country, and if their quarterback didn't get hurt in the fourth quarter, their season's very different. One of the funny things he said at the end of it was, you know, at one point people were calling it the biggest opener in football history. Like, yep. It's true. They did call it the GOAT, the greatest opener of all time.
Yeah. Credit Gary Stokin for his marketing genius behind that.
Except for the fact that now it looked like it's a playoff team versus a team that barely got to a bowl.
Yeah, I'm also not 100% sure that if DeAndre Francois survives. Here's the thing. If he survives that game, he's going to get hurt at some point in the season because that offensive line was that bad. So,
which is weird. Like,
take your pick. You guys realize they played Clemson.
They have Rick Trickett. Why are they that
bad? Boston College. Like, they played some other really good defensive lines. He was going to get hurt because they could not protect him. All right, let's get to 10 after tweets. Brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweet!
You can tweet in at Cube Show. Best way to be a part of the show, at Cole Kubrick, at Arky Shea. A couple different ways to be involved. At Mr. John D tweets, crazy how Malzahn is the only head coach left from the 2012 coaching carousel. Yeah, there were a lot of them that came and went that year.
Greg M. Wise tweets, how brilliant now is the move by Saban to lose the Iron Bowl? Gets that bye week last Saturday, rest players, doesn't risk a loss, and still in the playoffs. Brilliant!
That's why he's the greatest coach of all time. He knows when to lose games. Matt Connolly at Matt.
Y'all questioned him and Brian Daboll, but they knew what they were doing.
At Matt at the State, Nick Saban on Clemson, quote, this will by far be the best team we've played all year.
Wow.
Does that mean they lose?
Well, they've lost to the team that clearly wasn't by far the best team. So, yeah, probably they lose based on that.
David Hale at David Hale ESPN tweets, Clemson's last seven postseason opponents, Ohio State twice, Oklahoma twice, Alabama three times.
I cannot wait for Statmageddon to happen for this next month. All the stats say, hey, Dabo's good. Hey, Saban's good. Oh, man. Going to get a lot of stuff where we're just going to say, what?
Statmageddon.
Chuck Edwards says, comical hearing Ed Arkishe say, I don't like buys. Effectively, his team just had one into the college football playoff.
What team?
My team, bro. Dallas Cowboys. I don't remember saying I don't like buys. Every team gets a bye week. I don't understand. Why would I not like buys?
I just like this quote.
Buys for the first week. That's what I mean. Yeah. I don't like the... If you make it to the playoff, you shouldn't get a bye. I know the NFL does it, but they also have a 16-game schedule.
Yeah, that's... Mike Barber at RTD_MikeBarber tweets, hashtag Hokies coach Justin Fuente on being a candidate for other jobs. Quote, we've been approached and I've declined to talk to anybody.
What?
I like him coming out and saying, I'm not having any discussions about it this year. It's done. It's over. I'm the head coach of Virginia Tech. I appreciate that.
I mean, there you are. Listen, that's cool. As long as he stays there, we're cool with that, right?
Correct. If he were to leave, it might be a little bit of a different deal. SI College Football tweets, at Richard Dice explains why Todd McShay was right to ask Scott Frost about the Nebraska job in the moments after the UCF win. Are people saying he's not supposed to ask that? Well, it's the most relevant question involved with that game.
Some people, the relevant question was a double overtime conference championship game, Mr. Kowalik. You, by the way, as someone who asks controversial questions to coaches while they're trying to coach their game at their team on championship weekend, you're the one that asks. You would favor a guy getting all salted with the coach. Scott Frost is a championship coach. In the moments right after, he's being asked, how's Nebraska's recruiting class looking? That wasn't exactly the question.
All right. Al Bernstein, are you familiar with his work?
No.
He's the old man on boxing coverage.
Yeah.
Comes in and yells during...
he's the Gus Johnson.
Sort of,
he's the white Gus Johnson of boxing.
I got a bronze bomber, 48, 42, Alexander, come on, come on.
Gus Johnson, by the way, out of control this weekend. Could not be stopped. Awful, awful out of controlness.
Did you not appreciate his Dr. Pepper rant or extra plug during the...
Hornibrook White, there was like the little shovel pass, and he's like, oh, the Dr. Pepper pass! It's like, oh, you need that chest pass that everybody's doing?
What was more annoying? How mad people were about either Ohio State or Alabama not getting in, or how mad people are about the chest pass?
Probably the chest pass, but I'll tell you this. If I ever got into one of those, I'll take the L as long as I look at
it. You going to wind up and like try to throw it regular?
Oh, yeah, why not?
And burn that much time?
I'm getting 25 grand guaranteed. I can find a nice cheap state school.
No, you're dumb if you don't do the chest pass.
It makes you look like a sissy.
Al Bernstein tweets 18 hours ago.
You would be an internet sensation if you did the actual pass.
If you just like reared up and did like a...
Yeah, if you just kept rearing up
Randall
like a real
Cunningham wind up,
yeah,
through as hard as you could.
You would be a sensation.
Tried to knock the can over.
You'd be on TV and radio today.
Al Bernstein tweets, I'm not a huge fan of Saban or the Tide, but I do think it was the right decision to put them in the playoffs.
Okay.
I just appreciate his qualifier of, I don't like you or your team. But I guess it's okay that you're in.
You can
hashtag stick to boxing.
You can go blow a horn, but you know what? You're in.
Wow. I think I know where you're going on that.
Thanks,
it's not
by
radio
the way.
Safe.
Thanks, by the way. Not that we didn't know they were in. Hey, did anybody ask Al Bernstein his opinion on the committee?
Trevon Reed, at Trevon Reed, former Auburn DB.
Of course.
Tweets, this bowl game stuff is pathetic, SMH. Last year, Auburn, DAM, near 8-5 and play in Suga Bowl, SUGA.
It's Suga. That's how you spell it.
This year, DAM, near undefeated and play in Chick-fil-A Bowl.
It is the season. Chick-fil-A, la, 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 la. By the way, how do you spell sugar? Is there an H in there? You spelling it right.
There's an R in there.
Not if you say it cool, like sugar.
Hashtag best team wins. Hashtag 10-team playoffs. So I'm going to write. Let's see. Graph, and a graph.
Thanks, Trevon,
and a graph. Okay, so if we go 2-2,
yep,
and then 2-2, to sort of play their way in, like I'm looking,
yeah,
at brackets, like a bracket on top of a bracket,
sure,
and a bracket on top of a bracket.
Sure.
And then they would play again.
Right.
And then again in the championship.
Yeah.
So that's 8. All right. So I'm trying to, where do we squeeze 10?
Double bye.
Oh.
You heard it. It's controversial, but he's asking for it.
The 1 and 2 seeds missed the first two rounds. Like that.
Yes, right.
Like, if you're going to tweet that, do some math. Like, 10? Come on. Heather Dinich joins us next to talk college football playoff. Welcome back in Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Listen online, umpsports.com. There is some... There was a little bit of discussion yesterday about, and really Saturday night, the computers, and that the BCS got it right, and why did we get away from that? What are we doing?
I love those people. I love them so much. I really do.
And with everyone discussing resume being the end-all, be-all, seemingly all Saturday afternoon and evening, I mean, I even tweeted out, if all we care about is resume, let's just bring the damn computers back. Let's just plug in the wins and losses, and we'll go from there.
Let's put it in the
who cares?
Old-school Rubik's Cube, like before the Rubik's Cube came along.
And then you do get some of those computer nerds. It's like, do you not think we put time into this? Do you not think we take into account? It's a computer. It's not watching anything.
It's good for my algebra. It's good for me to play World of Warcraft. It's not good for picking college football teams.
Your final simulated BCS rankings of the season would have been... Clemson 1.
Okay, now we're talking.
Georgia 2.
Okay, a little bit of an upset.
Oklahoma 3.
Okay, they just flip-flopped.
And at 4, Alabama.
Okay, so they flip-flopped 2 and 3. Who is 5?
Ohio State.
Who is 6?
Wisconsin.
Who is 7?
USC.
Interesting. It's a little different than I think Auburn ended up being.
Auburn at 8. Auburn ended up 7th, I believe. And then UCF, 9, Penn State, Miami, Washington round out the top 12. That's if the BCS computer
started
still
today. You know what's crazy?
Sort of running things.
Is that my problem with the BCS was never, hey, did it get it right? It's not hard to pick a couple of teams by watching the season or putting some math together. Like, the math was never going to spit out UCF number 2. I don't understand that. Like, whatever math formula you put in, you were never going to wait the American Conference to be just as good or good enough to be considered with the SEC or anything like that. Just like the people are never going to pick it that way either. What I like about the BCS defenders, everyone that says, hey, the computer got it right every year, they're the same people who are defending the playoff. They're the same people.
Yeah.
The people are just defending whatever system we have now. They're the same people that are defending the bowl system we had before that. It's just, it's strange to me that there's a lot of people, and not all of you listening are this way, there's a lot of people who just defend the status quo. And I don't know why it's not more incumbent upon people to sort of challenge the norm and challenge the box, so to speak. And to sort of look at a system that is inherently unfair to everyone who is a possible participant. Because the only defense of it's not fair is, well, listen, is UCF going to be a team that could beat any one of these teams? I don't know, and we'll never know. And that's my point, is that we will never know. UCF doesn't get to be an 8 seed taking on a 1 seed Clemson. We'll just never know. And everyone just seems to be okay with that. Even though people have to play teams like UCF, they had to put them on their schedule to fill out their schedule. Georgia State has to show up. Not the best example, but there are teams. You got to put other teams on your schedule. And if they're in the same classification, FBS, then they're all eligible, essentially, for the national championship to start off the season. But in reality, we know that no one's ever going to get that shot that's not a Power 5 team under this system. And that's just the inherent unfairness of it, I think. And that's why I think college basketball is such a great model for something like this. Because, sure, Kentucky, Duke, Villanova, big-time schools from big-time conferences are going to be the team that probably wins it all every time. But no one gets to complain that their team that won the conference championship didn't at least get a shot. Teams with losing records get shots. Sometimes they lose, sometimes they win.
No, I agree. I got a couple other of college football notes that we haven't gotten to yet that I want to at least mention. Jimmy Smith reporting Friday that Shea Patterson has been given a release to explore transfer, but his release comes with stipulations. No SEC schools or teams on Ole Miss's schedule the next 2 years. So, of course, LSU is out. Some people thought that was where Shea Patterson would go.
It was committed to there at one point.
Now, he has not actually stated that he's definitely going to transfer, but I guess has made Ole Miss aware that he wants a release. I've been told that there were some legal representatives involved in him wanting that release, because it seems a little odd for Ole Miss to just say, yeah, man, cool, you're good to go, you can leave. Wondering maybe if Ole Miss didn't have a choice in this certain predicament. But he apparently is going to look elsewhere. Also,
I guess that also means no Bama, too. That Bama was going to take all the players.
Yeah, Tua. Have you seen that kid throw the ball?
That's true. How come he isn't playing more? Maybe he'll start the semifinal.
They got a couple weeks to prepare. Trey Wallace reported on Friday
He quoted a source saying that former Tennessee athletic director John Curry took a private plane associated with a previous employer to meet with Mike Leach in L.A. earlier in the week in a bid to circumvent Philip Fulmer's influence in his coaching hire, which to me seems so ass backwards because I don't know why Philip Fulmer had influence over the athletic director who is in place and employed to hire the coach.
It was a coup. It was sabotage. Saboteur, Philip Fulmer. He got in there, he got his greasy fat fingers on it, and now he's the athletic director. Which, by the way, for as slow as things have happened at Tennessee, their athletic website was updated pretty darn quick with the new AD, Philip Fulmer.
I just feel like that whole thing got so nasty, so slimy, so ugly Thursday and Friday with how that whole thing went down. I mean, he got fired while we were on the air, so we were able to tell you about the news as it broke, but it began to seem as though John Curry was leaking information, Fulmer and Tennessee were leaking certain information, and the reality is, if you don't believe that Philip Fulmer was after that job from the jump, then I think you're fairly naive to the way college athletics works and operates.
When I laid my chubby head down on the pillow Thursday night, Mike Leach was the new head coach of Tennessee. When I woke up, John Curry was being summoned back to Knoxville and being fired. That's how quick this thing is getting out of control at Tennessee. The fact that apparently Mike Leach not on Philip Fulmer's list of you can go talk to. He was on a specific challenge to go talk to guys specifically Philip Fulmer wanted. And John Curry apparently didn't take the Tennessee plane, took another plane.
Another one
to go talk to Mike Leach. Had a great meeting. John Curry's like, I nailed it. Gets a phone call. We need you back in Knoxville. We need you to come to the chancellor's office.
And now Philip Fulmer's got, how much did you say per year to be the Tennessee athletic director?
It's over four, but that's what happened.
He's not getting $4 million a year.
Here's the chance.
$4 million the whole deal, maybe.
Even then, that's 2 years. Chancellor.
Speaking of paydays, I don't know if you saw this news about Brett Bielema and him walking away.
I didn't. There's so much stuff to happen.
Mark Slaybaugh reports that Arkansas will pay Brett Bielema instead of the $5.9 million he's owed. His attorney argued it should be the full $15.4 million,
sure,
which clearly is not stated that way in the contract. But Brett Bielema is going to receive $11.8 million to go away as the Arkansas head football coach.
There's screw you money, and then there's go away money. This is go away money.
Apparently, there was some sort of a deal that he had with a Booster Alumni Association. And Brett Bielema is going to get essentially $12 million to not coach the Arkansas Razorbacks this year.
It's called the good
life. 5.9.
That's good. Well, listen, it's called getting a raise.
All right, let's welcome in Heather Dinich, covers college football for ESPN. She obviously has been covering the college football playoff committee the last few days. Heather, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I just got through airport security here. It's the first time I've seen the sun in about 4 days. I've been camped out at the Gaylord Texan.
What do you think the most difficult part for Kirby Hocutt and this committee were when placing the final four teams into this year's playoff?
Well, from what I'm told, they went to bed at about 1:15 Central Time here, and Alabama was number four. And there were a few people who thought, we need more time on this. Some people thought it was done. and other people thought they just needed to sleep on it and take a fresh look. And when they woke up on Sunday morning, I think it was pretty clear that most of them agreed after some more debate that Alabama was unequivocally better than Ohio State, which meant they could toss the tiebreakers. I think getting to the point where you can do that and say Alabama is unequivocally better is the most difficult part, but in the end they couldn't get over that loss to Iowa.
And you think ultimately that loss to Iowa is what kept Ohio State out?
I think that's a big part of it, but I also think watching that game, I mean, you guys watched it, I'm sure. You watch it in the first half and you're like, wow, Ohio State, they're probably going to get in this thing. And then the second half, you're like, oh, they're the Buckeyes. Where's Alabama? Are they getting in this thing? And to me, that championship game was sort of a microcosm of the inconsistency Ohio State has shown the committee all season. And my gut feeling on Sunday morning was that the most people in the room are going to say Alabama is simply better. That's it. End of story. They are the better team.
I agree with you. We talked about it a little bit earlier on the show that just that second half of that Big Ten championship game lacked so much of being impressive in any form or fashion for Ohio State. And I think also what really may have hurt them is that Wisconsin, although sticking around, didn't look very good themselves, and Ohio State really struggled to put them away. Do you think that sort of really stacked the deck against Ohio State?
Yeah, I mean, all those pieces of the puzzle, they all come together at the end. They all play a role, right? I mean, there's not one thing necessarily that's the dagger or the gold medal at the end of the season. But like you said, all those things, the committee sees them. They're sitting there. They're watching the games. They're eating hot dogs and hamburgers together. And that's all a part of the puzzle. But don't forget, last year, too, Penn State's loss to Michigan, that was one of the things that kept them out as well. So I think we learned this year from the selection committee that they do not care what public repercussions or anything like that is outside of that committee room. They go in there with the intent to do their job of picking the four best teams, regardless of how many come from the SEC, how many come from the ACC, how many losses they have. At the end of the day, it's about getting the four best, and I think that's what they did on Sunday morning when they kept Alabama at that fourth spot.
Speaking with Heather Dinich, college football reporter for ESPN, covers the college football playoff and was there on site with the college football playoff committee yesterday. What was your opinion on 1-4, not the teams that got in, but how they were seeded and how that played out? Did you feel like they were spot on?
Spot on. It didn't surprise me in the least. And especially considering the way Clemson looked, the way Georgia looked, the way Oklahoma looked. I mean, those teams left no doubt, right? They left no doubt. And Clemson had been number one, and they just crushed Miami. And then you look at Georgia, and they were able to avenge that regular season loss against Auburn, and the defense is playing so good. And Oklahoma with Baker Mayfield, and just what a fantastic show that they've been putting on offensively lately, plus the resume. I mean, it wasn't just me. Those within that selection committee meeting room thought that it was very clear it was Clemson, Oklahoma, Georgia in the top three. After that, that's when they got down to business.
How do you feel the committee balanced geography? Because I understand Clemson gets the one seed to be able to go to New Orleans. Do you think it's a fair offset for Georgia to not be four and not go to New Orleans to play the number one seed, but have to go all the way out to Pasadena? How much of an impact did that have on 1-4 where the teams were?
None whatsoever. They seed the top four teams based on who they think is the best, period, the end. The only time geography comes into play is they do not put the number one seed at a geographic disadvantage. After that, it's every man for himself.
Heather Dinich with us, college football reporter, was on site covering the college football playoff committee. When you look at two teams from one conference being in, ultimately, now that you've seen it, what does that say to you about this committee and this process?
It says that they're going to get the four best. And I talked to Bill Hancock, the executive director of the college football playoff, yesterday afternoon a little bit when the dust settled. And I think he put it best. He said it's pure and simple. Get the four best teams no politics. They don't have to worry about that. They were in that committee meeting room, and they didn't even discuss the fact that it was two teams from the SEC. Do they know it? Of course they know it. I mean, they're aware of it. Are they aware of Nick Saban politicking? Yeah, they hear it, they read it, whatever it is, but is it influencing them? Not one bit. They shut that door, and I'm telling you, what happens in that room stays in that room, and it's just about picking the four best teams. And I think that by putting two teams in the same conference, that's further evidence that they don't care about what people think about it. They're just trying to do their job.
When you see two teams from the SEC in, does that immediately make your mind go to, all right, this thing's going to expand soon?
No, it doesn't. So the 10 FBS commissioners and Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick, I call them the suits of the sport. They're the ones with the power to change that. And I don't get any vibe from any of them that there's interest in doing that at this time. It's a 12-year contract. People have to remember that. We just finished the fourth season. And is it inevitable that it expands? Probably. But I don't think it's anytime soon. And a big reason for that is they don't want automatic qualifiers. I mean, think about it. If Stanford would have won the Pac-12, you'd have a three-loss Pac-12 champion there. And if Ohio State would have lost to Michigan and won the Big Ten, you'd have a three-loss Big Ten champ. That's what they wanted to avoid by keeping automatic qualifiers out.
Well, that's actually a really good point. And I'm kind of with you. I don't look at this and say, oh, expansion's coming. We definitely have to get to something else. I mean, if we're debating and we're uncertain about if the fourth team is truly deserving to be in, I don't understand why that would force us to really want to go to eight and have to debate on 7, 8, 9, 10 teams and who gets those last couple spots to fit in there. So all in all, good stuff, Heather. Appreciate you joining us to sort of discuss it and talk about it. And excellent job yesterday. Look forward to having you back soon.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Heather Dinich covers college football and the College Football Playoff Committee at CFB Heather via Twitter.
Let me ask you this question. And this is one part of college football fandom that I don't get. So I'll just ask you. Because you said this is a great day for college football. Why do you think that having debate over the best team to get into a spot, why do you think that's so great for college football and so unnecessary for other sports?
Well, I think that college...
We go from talking about analytics and talking about the teams on the field to really just sort of fantasy booking.
Yeah. For me, personally, I believe that college football brings in a different sort of passion that other sports do. And I understand that a lot of teams we grew up cheering for, it was the only team we cheered for, we're from that town, we related to them, we knew someone on the team, whatever. But no professional sport can bring in the personal passion, the personal relationship, and the type of investment that college football can. Because a lot of people, not all, and you don't have to. I don't care if you went to Auburn and cheer for Auburn or not. I don't care if you didn't go to Alabama and cheer for Alabama. Who cares? It doesn't bother me. But the reality is a lot of people did. And if you put your money, time, effort, energy into a school and you love what that school stands for and the fact that you are a part of that school, that gives you more of a personal investment to root for that team and want that team and its other teams to do well. So I think college football is always going to bring out a more passionate fan base than any professional sport because there's more people who have more invested in that brand.
But most fans, oops, turn that on. Most fans didn't go to the schools.
No.
So, and they're the ones that want the debate and think this makes it great, what makes college football so great and different. And NFL does better ratings than everybody. And it's a little different because it's less regional than the college football is. But I don't get it. I don't get why the debate is such a necessity and such a need.
Well, there's no other
such a desired commodity, because people say, like, isn't it great we're debating who the two best teams are? It's like, no, it's not great.
Well, there's also,
we discussed this entire season.
There's also no real way to solve it otherwise. There's too many teams.
Well, there could be a way.
How?
I've laid out my plan before. The 16-team college football playoff. 10 conferences.
But not all conferences are created equal.
Exactly.
So the 16. NFL has what they call a salary cap and what they call revenue sharing. So it's all created equal, and they also don't have recruiting. They have a draft.
But you have 16 teams, all conference champions get in, and then you have to pick out the 6 wild cards. But at least if you win your conference, you're guaranteed a shot. And your Sun Belt team, probably not going to win the national championship. But you got a shot. Let's go to Garrett real quick. Garrett's on the line. Garrett, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
What up?
Good.
Hey, so over the weekend, I heard a lot of things about aggressive penalties and that they'd rather take, you know, we're getting a lot of penalties, but they're aggressive, and that's okay. So can you describe or explain what an aggressive penalty is? Because personally, when you get a penalty and you're being aggressive, you may be being over-aggressive, and that's, personally, I think it's kind of stupid.
Thanks, Garrett. I think what Rob Gronkowski did was aggressive. Right, Cole?
A little bit. I mean, he gave the guy
dropped the damn elbow off the top rope.
I think what Kirby Smart, and I believe that Garrett's going with what Kirby Smart said at halftime there, I think what he's going after is there are – I refer to them more as effort penalties than I do aggressive penalties. And then you have just dumb penalties where you hit somebody so late that it doesn't help the play. It's not beneficial to how you're playing the game. I mean, I think grabbing a guy's face mask is not necessarily, and holding on to it is not necessarily an aggressive penalty or an effort penalty.
Effort.
Now, you know, hitting a quarterback and landing on top of him, that's just trying to hit a guy and be physical and play the game. I just think there's a difference between dumb penalties and trying to play the game at a high rate of speed with a high level of physicality. And that's kind of what Kirby Smart was saying. Now, that I think Georgia players are going out of their way to lay on top of Jarrett Stidham, Kerryon Johnson, and impose their will on them a little bit? Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I thought was funny that Gary Danielson brought up? Like, that's an emphasized penalty. And I kept thinking, I feel like that's the first time I've seen that call this year.
And it wasn't a bad call.
I didn't think it was a bad call either.
I thought it was actually a good call because it was so blatantly obvious what was happening.
Yeah, if it was so emphasized, like, I feel like other players would have gotten hit that way at some point. Maybe that was the first time that I had seen it happen.
Right.
It's the first time I'd definitely seen that call where,
if you got a lineman who's 15 yards behind a long run and he peels back and blocks somebody in the back because he knows he can get a big hit on somebody, that's not an effort penalty. That's not a fit. That's sure. Not what did Kirby Smart call them? Physical penalties.
Aggressive.
That's not an aggressive penalty. That's just dumb. I mean, if you got a guy who is battling someone on a 50-50 ball and maybe makes a little bit too much contact and he's trying to keep that receiver from catching the football, that can be considered an aggressive penalty. You're trying to win.
The ones I thought were more aggressive, it's that, hey, a pass interference, this part of the field is 15 yards as opposed to 60 and a touchdown.
I would almost call that smart as opposed to aggressive. Like, that's an intelligent penalty.
I don't mean like – I don't even think aggressive – I mean, I guess you could – it's sort of splitting hairs whether aggressive is like aggressive – you're being proactive with the
penalty.
But
then you have the ones
– like an accidental face mask.
Yeah, then you have the plays where I believe it was Darrell Williams who like accidentally – touches a guy 2 yards out of bounds and he doesn't even go to the ground and they call a late hit. I think it was on Swift when he's like 2 yards out of bounds and he's being pushed out of bounds and the runner doesn't even go down and they called a late hit on that.
Is that this one where Steven Roberts sort of just fell down? Yeah.
And Darrell Williams was coming over there with him and they call a late hit on Auburn. If you don't take the ball carrier to the ground, I don't even know how you call a late hit on tackling somebody out of bounds.
I think the next play ended up being that touchdown from Jake Fromm afterward. You're like, well, that's the game.
Yeah.
And I also agree with Gary Danielson on that one. A lot of people hated what his play call or his analysis. Some of it's warranted. Most of it's not. That I didn't think in the way that game was playing out, what that game meant, that that was a harsh enough. I didn't think that was enough warranted for a penalty. But
are
then,
we being penalty vultures right
no,
now?
No, no, no. We're talking about aggressive penalties versus other penalties. We're agreeing with someone else's.
Quickly before we go off the air here, Tom Hart was at the game, and I wasn't able to make it over. But Tom texted me right after the game. He said, "What is Gary Danielson doing to upset everyone?" He's like, "I'm looking at Twitter, and people around me are looking at Twitter and social media, and apparently he's making everyone mad." And I'm like, I haven't really had much of a problem with everything he said, other than he's talking a lot about Alabama.
I think that's probably has to be the biggest thing. But it's funny because people thought he was salivating over Georgia when Georgia made good plays. But then I thought at the beginning of the game when Auburn was playing well, he seemed pretty happy that Auburn was doing well too. I think he just likes good football play. I think we're in the minority as far as what we think Gary Danielson's doing.
And I saw people tweeting about how Gary Danielson's past his prime. You know, bring in so and so, or get so and so in there. That you know, he's lost his fastball. He's not good. Now, the only bone that I have to pick with Gary Danielson is that you've now gone two games, and you haven't learned that number 71 from Auburn's name is Braden Smith,
not Brandon. It's Brandon Smith.
It's Braden Smith.
It's weird. Braden is not a normal name for like when he grew up, but you should have learned it by now.
Yeah,
you've had that team.
Couple
like
times.
Four times this year.
So,
and it was just like the last game you had. Brandon Smith, great tackle there. I mean, or great block, should be.
Roundtable next. Abraham after that. Maybe I'll yell at him again today.